I'm Jody Weitz, results and success coach, and these podcasts teach you how to make significant changes to live your dreams, make a positive impact on the world, and drop your regrets. It's time for you to get spectacular. Welcome back to Your Spectacular Life. I'm here with Hussein Halleck. Hi, Hussein.
Hi, Jody.
Nice to be with you on the show. I'm looking forward to our discussion. Let me tell you something about Hussein. Hussein Halleck is a founder, entrepreneur, and strategist dedicated to helping people and organizations find clarity in complexity and build lasting impact. As CEO of Nexti Centrum, he guides teams and leaders worldwide through digital transformation, innovation, and value-driven growth. His latest book, The Dark Art of Life Mastery, is a blunt, honest invitation to confront your illusions, reclaim your agency, and stop waiting for permission to live. Hussein's work challenges easy answers and rewards anyone willing to choose meaning over comfort. Wow, that's great. I love the bluntness of what I just read, Hussein. Now, you know, there's a lot of stuff in there, and I'm going to say easy to say, hard to do. Have you always been into personal growth and, you know, always, you know, just done things, snap, went to the next moment, knew what you wanted?
I had no clue what I wanted, actually.
If
I, yesterday, I was sitting with a few friends of mine, and they were asking me, like, how come you did all of these things? And the answer was very simple. Growing up in Syria, we didn't have actually multiple opportunities. Like, you grow up, you hear this, I think, all the time, like, you can be what everything you wanted. Well, in Syria is exactly the opposite. You can never be anything you ever wanted. You want to play guitar? No, there's no future. You wanted to be an artist? There's no future there. If you wanted to even get into university, it's not about what you want. It's about what your grades can get you, period.
Like, goodness.
And you have very limited opportunity. So what that, at the time, of course, it sounds really bad. But looking back at it, it's like it gave me freedom because everything that I wanted to do was not an option. So I approached life as not something that I need to commit to, as opposed to, well, you know, let me try this. So everything that I tried was not something like I needed to build a career or I needed to reach an objective. It was like, I don't know if this is gonna work. Let me give it a try. And that ended up giving me a life that is so so winding trail. I done everything under the sun, from designing an amusement park, space-themed amusement park for the Disney of the Middle East, to dubbing a Disney movie, to playing on a band, to showing up in a morning show for 40 million viewers. Like,
that's incredible. But what I'm hearing is the life, you know, that they were limited choices, but yet you had to structure. You know, you knew what choices you had, not that you were going to, again, knew what you were going to do, but you knew you had to get good grades to open up some of the opportunities. And that's at least what you knew. And that, I mean, is freedom within structure.
You might argue, yeah, there's freedom within like the limitation. For me being who I am and having the mom that I did, she was very committed to the point that there was no option. Like, I would probably be scared shitless to come back home and I wasn't number one. Or if my grades were less than perfect.
Oh, so no.
Yeah, so but she was she for example, when I was fourth grade, I looked at people having Game Boy in their hands, and like I loved this, and I was so into technology and stuff like that, and I begged my mom, I was like, can I get one? She's like, yeah, just graduate high elementary school at number one, and I'll get you one. So
Oh,
that's 2
my
years from the yeah.
goodness.
I
And
did. I did graduate first of my class over the whole school, and
Nice.
she bought me something that costed her, because things are expensive in Sierra compared to the salaries. To give you an
Absolutely.
idea, an engineer's salary at the time was $100. So,
My goodness.
yeah, mom had to spend the salary of 3 months to get me the game, and it was one of the greatest things that I've ever had. So I learned, I think, in many ways, I've learned that anything that I need to pursue requires a ton of work and it requires a lot of patience. I learned that because we didn't have those resources, and I learned that my mom would wake up early in the morning, would kick me out of bed, sleep in my bed so I don't come back and sleep, and give me dictation, English dictation. That's how I got very good with English. Like, she would be very committed, and her commitment kind of rubbed off on me, and I'm willing to dedicate a lot of time and energy to get something done, whatever that thing is.
And that sounds like that's one of your great lessons. You can do anything as long as you put the hard work in and the commitment. And you said, it's been a windy, twisty journey in your life so far. That kind of commitment, hard work, facing the next curve that you don't expect, builds a certain faith in yourself that, okay, I can figure it out as long as I, really do put my mind to it.
I think it taught me, like, first of all, it taught me that life, I mean, because I grew up the way I grew up, my grandfather was a very rich man, but my father w chose to go live in the city, leave the countryside. We had a lot of land there, and pursue his journalistic kind of, he was a journalist, but then was prevented from writing. My mom was a teacher, so they come from different backgrounds. And we grew up to the point we were poor, to the point that my clothes were the what my neighbor threw out. So he would throw out the, let's say, their jeans. Thankfully, we had the same body, so that was like, I would wait for him to throw that out. And so for me, I never paid attention to these things. Like, these things became, because if it mattered to me. Now, of course, as a kid, as a teenager, I love to have the sneaker. I love to, so I cared about these things. But as I grew up, these are what I was respected for, or what I sought meaning in, is music, writing, relationships with people, not how I looked. Like, that faded away the moment I grew out of teenage years, and that didn't matter anymore. And my whole focus was, like, what did I want to do? What are the things I want to pursue? And I would pick something, like, I wanted to be play guitar, and I would spend 10 hours every day training. I don't know where that goes, but at the end of the day, I ended up playing at the top bands in Syria, and I didn't sing. So, but I said, you know what? I have better English accent than anyone around me. When we formed the band and said, who's gonna sing? I said, me, because I can speak better English than you guys. So I started learning how to sing, and I dedicated myself, and I became also celebrated as a singer. I mean, in the small community of rockers in Syria, but they were very committed. They were one of the top. So these are the things, yeah.
And it sounds like you were very passionate, which helped you to rise up in the ranks. It's great that you really love playing guitar and that you really wanted to be the front man, being a singer in this band. I think that's great and very unusual about getting out of your teens and then having things not matter. I mean, I know In the US, it takes 30s, 40s, sometimes never, for these things not to matter, for relationships to matter. That's usually 40s, 50s that I've noticed, not with everyone. But and that's interesting because I want to talk about your book and love it. It's just so interesting. It's little bits of wisdom with lots of graphics, and it's just great. So
Thank you.
yeah, oh yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's called The Dark Art of Life Mastery. And what got you writing, and are you the illustrator as well?
I wish that's probably one of the dreams that didn't materialize. I ended up being a graphic designer for my love for graphic design and art, and I paint, but I never, it's one of these things that I never dedicated myself to kind of master. It was, so other things took my way, but I worked with a Portuguese artist called Antonio Paiade, and I loved his work. It connected with me when I saw it. I was looking for, because I wanted the book to be a resemblance of the thing I favor the most, which is I used to go with the love of my life, which is now, she's now my wife. We would go and walk in galleries, and we would talk through that. We loved that. And or the museum, we would go to the National Museum in Syria and Damascus. And it's the idea of walking while you're surrounded by artifact and art and history and culture. It just enriches the conversation. We just like it's the my favorite time. Wherever I go, museums and galleries are the my favorite things. So I wanted the book to sound like that, to be like a conversation with someone. So it's not like somebody hammering on you like this is what you need to do. It's more like sometimes it's small, sometimes it's big, and then there's an image that is related to that conversation. So it speaks to the different sensory of people. So I'm glad that you like that. And that was the intention of the book.
And it does move like that. I've got to say, I didn't think of that. You've got a concept, you've got some prose, and you've got a picture. And it's almost like chatting with someone, then looking up at another picture, which starts another section, more prose, more thoughts, and then another picture. Some things are bolded to really get the point across, like when you are excited in a museum, like, oh my gosh, look at that. So very very well done, very creative to put it together
Thank
like
you.
that. Now, I just want to read some of the opening pages in the book. And that is let's just get there. Your first lesson in mastery is to expect nothing and to expect everything. Now, that almost sounds like that sentence is at odds. Can you explain that?
It comes from how life works. Like, expect nothing means don't rely, like you don't, you haven't earned, let's say, anything in life. Not because you don't deserve it, but because life doesn't care. It's like the sea, like life doesn't care about you, or doesn't care about you. Like it's you don't matter in the greater sense of thing. And it's very freeing if you do that, because if you start expecting, like when I landed here in Vancouver 2014, I was already an accomplished entrepreneur, lived in a villa, had very good money, and I was very well respected. I landed in Vancouver and nobody recognized me, and I had to apply for 200 jobs, and I even went on social assistance.
Oh
Like
man,
life
yeah.
is like, it's like all of what I've done, I went in with that expectation, and life smacked me in the face. I was like, I don't care. You don't exist here. And I had to start all over again. And when you do that, when you expect everything, what happens is you're ready that anything can happen. And what that does, it gives you that freedom that, you know what, my choices should not be built on, what I've done or just on what I want to do. I should like, it's good to have goals. It should good to have objectives and be ready to change along the way. And what gave me all the freedom and all the wonderful people and the wonderful opportunities that I kind of went, came across, and also helped me overcome the challenges, because I used to take, and I still, I mean, I'm human. I still take challenges very personally. Like, why is this happening to me? And then, right. Of course, there's no answer. And right. The only answer I hear from inside, well, I must have done some mistakes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then when I let go of all of that and let go of even why this happened to me, and I start like, what is happening? What can I do with it? What is my choice? Because that's all that matters. Mm. What do I choose right now? Mm. It doesn't matter if I have 50 years in like behind me or 10 years or 1 year. What matters is what I choose right now.
Right.
And exactly. A lot of times there's a story of a friend of mine who we graduated from engineering together. He was a brilliant guitarist. And when I asked him, like, why don't you pursue guitar? I was like, well, I spent 5 years studying engineering. Do you want me to throw that away? And then if I ask him 5 years after that, what happens? Well, I spent 10 years in engineering. Do I throw that away? And you know, that sunken cost fallacy that, well, I did this all my life. Like, I've been in advertising all my life. But when I landed in Vancouver, I had an opportunity to jump into the startup community.
Yeah.
And I jumped in, and that was the greatest thing I've ever done. So somebody else would say, well, no, I'm in advertising. I want to build my career. And I think we fall into these things that we built up. Like Steve Jobs said, everything that we have now, somebody has made them up. It doesn't exist.
It's somebody, right. Somebody has already created that image, that phrase, that saying. We're just borrowing it.
And those paths that exist, like, lawyer, they're great if that's what you choose.
Right.
But that doesn't mean, and especially right now with AI, it's changing everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So look at your choices from your point of view and what you're going after rather than what you're locked into or what society wants from you or what's available.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can choose something completely different, and there are equal chances of success and failure. That's the other thing.
I really like that. There are equal chances at success and failure with whatever you choose. I like that. I want to read another quote based on what we're talking about, or an excerpt from the book. Your brain evolved over millennia to prioritize survival, always scanning. I threw a few things in. There is a big gap between what really is, the way you perceive it, and how it changes your life experience as it's unfolding. It takes work to mind the gap. It takes presence to alter your perception. It takes a lifetime to master your thoughts, words, and action. And what you're saying is we are socialized to say, well, I'm not going to throw this away. I'm not going to waste my time. And that's where you stop. You don't perceive, you don't ask the next questions, which is really another area in the book where you say you got to ask questions, you got to test out your theories, your methodologies.
Yeah.
But you don't ask questions beyond that, like, will I be truly happy doing engineering for another 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just stop at, I need to. You know, I'm already working, I'm making money, I'm surviving well. Surviving well being the catchphrase of I can't take a chance or choose something different.
Yeah. The way that I learned that is from, if you look at, let's say, especially when working with entrepreneurs that have exited. So they've achieved, let's say, the pinnacle of what you want, like exited for $10, $50, $100 million. Mm. And one of the things that are surprising is at the pinnacle of their success, they are the most kind of they have the most meaningless experiences in the sense that they've lost that touch with meaning. In fact, it happens also to Olympians through my research. Like Olympic players, when they've achieved, what is that? There is the swimmer, the American swimmer who won like, I don't know,
Mark
a gazillion medals.
Spitz or no, Michael Phelps.
Yes.
Yes.
He had the most depression after his win.
Yes. Yes, he did. I read
Because
about that.
once you've climbed that summit, well, what else is left? If all your character and all your life is dedicated towards that, what is left? So for me, what I try to what you see with entrepreneurial mindset, I call it the play, so that because entrepreneurial usually is focused just on business, but I call it the play mindset. The play mindset is, well, what happens when you finish the game? You play something else. If you look at kids, they're never, depressed and wondering what to play. They will play with anything, like they will play with the stuff that you don't want them to play in. They will all they're looking at life as a way to discover, to engage. And they move from and without even the hint of remorse or feeling guilty. They would be spending an hour building something Lego, and then they see something nice and they move right there. They don't say, well, I spent an hour building this. No, they are living in the moment. But what happens is we get educated out of that. And I don't mean this as a dig at education or anything, but education evolved as a way to teach us to fit within the industrial model, where because we are very expansive, people have all kind of things. We get engaged in all kind of things. And we have so many different things, but we have to be educated for years to find focus, because it's not a natural way of being. Our natural way is discovery, exploration, openness. So we lose that because we need to fit into society. And you can only fit when you're like, when you become small, not big. So everything I talk about is about, coming back to your nature of being big and exploratory. And that is what I advise people to is like realizing that you play, and what happens when things don't go, you lose if you've ever played a game, or you ever played, you play the bass and you play if you play music, it doesn't work out. What do? You try it again. You try a different tune. You try a different lick, and you continue. And there's a joy in that. There's a joy in the discovery. If you nailed it from first one, it's not just a repetition. That's why live is such a great experience, because it's a new way to explore the same thing. It's deepening and deepening the experience, and that is where joy is. But society has took that away because you need to fit in, not because it's bad or like, but because they need you to fit in. And that's going away right now because of the way that things are.
Exactly. Lots of things, AI, political culture, etc. And going back to the example where kids are building Legos for an hour, they have more fun tearing it down and then going on to the next thing. All right, I'm Godzilla. I'm gonna tear down this building that I just broke. So, yeah,
It's so
play
much fun.
is so much fun, and play is it's creative, and it's what we call spitballing, throwing out things and just seeing what sticks, and but never never being so committed to this one idea that it's gonna work. As a coach, many times people start off one thing and then they go with another because they've had a chance to either do research or to have an aha moment, and it's great for them. I want to read another excerpt because this is great. This is kind of really what stuck with me is, it's about being in the moment. A lot of people aren't comfortable in the moment, so they distract themselves. That's the main thing, what they do. Things may not be going well, or they're just used to running, an endless to-do list in their head. So the excerpt is asking yourself, what is the one thing that matters most in this moment? The one thing that makes a real difference right here, right now, the one thing, if lost, nothing else matters. And that really struck a chord with me because it really keeps you aligned with your values, with what's going on, and it helps you to keep present. What would you say about that?
This came from one time me and my wife, we were in one of these repeating, I would say, financial tight points. And we were in our bedroom and we were sitting, and she was like worried about like, what are we gonna do tomorrow? You know, what like what and me, I just said, and it just came up, like it's not like I'm always this wise person who knows what to say. And I said, does it really matter? Does it really matter right now if we have $1 million in the bank or we have nothing in the bank right at this moment? We're together, we're healthy, the kids are safe. Right at this moment, this doesn't matter. I'm not saying it's good or bad, but at right at this moment, there's something else that we can spend, and because right now this worry is not going to get us anywhere. It's already at night. It's not like I'm going to get out of bed and work and not sleep, because that's not helpful. Tomorrow I'll wake up and I'll deal with that in the moment that I can deal with it. And we get used to this worrying about what's going to happen tomorrow. What's going to happen when I meet someone? What's going to happen when I talk to that girl? Is she going to reject me or not? And we forget where we are in the moment. And when we are not in the moment, there is all of our body is dedicated for the fear and the anticipation and even the joy of what's happening. But what we're missing is the joy of being there and the joy of experiencing. And when we anchor ourselves, we are calmer. We are, I mean, that's my secret for being calm. Like the world can end. And I was like, okay, I get all of this. I get there's a disaster and all of this. What can I do right now? And this is something that players do. It's the state of flow of being there. Because if you're playing and you're worried about how much you're going to get paid, or you know, or who's angry at you, whatever, you're not going to play well. If you're a musician and you're thinking about something else, you're going to lose track. It's not a helpful place of being. And I think that is kind of, I realized it's the access point to the joy of life, because you experience moments of joy without any reason, just by being there. Because there's no reason to be upset. That most of the reasons to be upset or to be overexcited, let's say, good or bad, exist either in the future or in the pre or in the past. But in the moment, all you have is the people that you're with, anything that you choose to do, and that's it. And if you anchor yourself there, there's an access to, for me, it's the moments of joy, like pure joy of being. And it's such a brilliant thing. And it doesn't have to be where you have to meditate and do, it's just that, you know, breathing's like, what am I doing right now? What am I feeling right now? It's just simple things. And what do I like to do? And then that opens up the door to a better choice as well. Because your choices are not based on like, oh, tomorrow what's going to happen? So what can I do? What can I do? And you have this, you know, running around like a headless chicken.
You know, it's so true. I think that survival mechanism is part of where the worry and the anxiety come in. You know, if I continually think about it, I'll come up with an answer, but it's really the opposite if you let go. And in your book, you mentioned flow. You know, you're in that state of flow and ease and joy. Then you're going to be much more happier, much more open to the opportunities that come your way. And some of the other things is, you know, when choices appear in the moment, you know, decisions come with ease and the object of your focus becomes clear. You know, you're in that flow state. You're not worrying. You know, you're saying, I can't do anything right now, anyways. Why don't I, you know, my choice is to live with presence and flow and appreciation for the people I'm with right now. And that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's also something I learned from music, because you know, you have when you show up at training and your mind is somewhere else, you ruin it for everybody else. And usually your fellow kind of musicians will, especially if it's especially in Syria, and like the instruments are expensive, time, it's very hard to find a studio because it's not like you have the walls are very thin. Like I used to train to sing into a pillow so that my neighbors don't knock on the on the on the on the wall. So when you show up and everybody has gone through hell to show up there, you better be present, or else they're not gonna let you. Like no matter how much they like you, whatever, they're gonna tell you off. So that taught me, and especially when you do live shows and like when you're on stage, you cannot disappear into your thoughts. You have to be very present so that you can connect with the audience, and you can, that's how you enjoy the experience. So I think that taught me a lot. It gave me access to the feeling of it in the moment. And since then I've been craving that. And for me, the way I experience it is always go on things that are always new. So I became this, even to the point that I'm not saying it's good or bad, without labeling it. I am not good when things are stable. So I'm more of a change agent. So even I left one of the companies where I helped them five times their revenue, and the CEO was blown away. He's like, "What are you doing? Who's offered you more money?" I said, "No, I'm leaving." He said, "Why are you leaving?" I said, "Because now you're stable. You need somebody else than me, because otherwise I'm gonna mess things up, like because you had a challenge, and I went in, and that's it. The challenge is over. Unless you have a bigger challenge, then bring me back. But right now you need somebody who's good with stability. It's a different mindset.
It
So I'm not
is.
saying it's good or bad. Everybody has different access, but that's what I realized. For me, it's the joy of not knowing, the joy of uncertainty. I'm extremely comfortable when things are I don't like it, by the way, but I find home in it in a way.
Well, that's lovely because that has helped you to move through all the challenges that you've had in your life, and you can be at home either place, but you do, it sounds like, crave for a little more excitement. And that's when you have to be creative. You have to start thinking and saying, all right, how am I going to solve this? And what's the best way to go about that? And I totally get the music analogy of playing for people, because if you're not present, you're going to get some dirty looks from your band members.
100%.
But it's all fun. And just I'm gonna end with a few things. I love the way that you talk about avoiding burnout, and you say recharge when you're at 80%. Don't let it go on, because you're not going to be efficient. You're not going to do things well. So recharge in another way is to say no. Stop being a people pleaser. We always want people to like us, but you gotta say no to those things that aren't priorities, or aren't, asking yourself that question, what's important to me now? You're going to be caught in a lot of wasteful activities that will burn you out. So part of this is the questions to make better choices. All right, is again asking yourself the no question, or am I at 80%, or what is the clear focus right now?
I think this came from because I was a lot into self-help and reading business books, because I didn't I graduated as an engineer, and I grew up at a time before the internet. It was the 90s, and especially in Syria, we don't have books about business. Most of the books were either scientific or literature, which I loved, or politics. We didn't have the mindset. We don't have the word entrepreneur actually in Arabic.
Interesting.
Once I started reading, and some of the literature was about overcoming like mind over matter kind of thing.
Mm.
If you remember that, which is, you know, wake up at 5 o'clock, you know, you control your destiny and stuff like that. And to a certain extent, now maybe I misunderstood it, but one of the things is like, no, I'm capable. And I got interested in the sleep patterns. So one of the sleep patterns were like these things have been studied by the American military, and I love strategy and I follow these things. So one of these patterns is you're awake for 4 hours and then you sleep 20 minutes.
Oh,
And then you awake for 4 hours and then 20 minutes and you end up sleeping 2 hours per day. I applied that for 6 months.
Now
it's what happens is the thesis behind that is you get, even if you sleep 8 hours, you get only 2 hours of REM sleep, which is the deep sleep where you get the rest that the body needs. So REM sleep, when you do that, the first week you're a zombie, but then what happens is your body gets used and immediately within these 20, once you close your eyes, it throws you into REM sleep immediately. So that's the thesis behind that. Now I did it, but what ended up happening, even though I was like, I had a lot of time on my hand, what did I do with that time? I spent it sitting, working. And also because I used to work in Dubai and go around, I ended up sleeping some of those 20 minutes in the car. What ended up suffering is my back completely suffered from back pain like crazy. So that's one. The other thing is that I realized that, well, this is not a quality of life. Like, yes, I'm getting more time to work, but that doesn't give me anything. It's just more time to work. And what is it? So at the end of it, like when I measured, where did I have impact? And that's I didn't have that impact. And now I'm very insistent on sleeping 7 hours, you know, to get enough rest. And the quality of my life has increased when I actually compressed work within a limited time. And I protect time, let's say, when my kids show up or when I have time with my wife. And I'm lucky because I work for myself. So I can design my schedule and I can be present. And that changed everything. And that is where that came, where, you know, you have to, you cannot treat yourself like a robot. You cannot treat yourself like a computer. We're not a resource to be mined. You have to treat yourself, everybody's different, of course, but you have to treat yourself as a human being where you have challenges. You have days where you're not at your 100%. Actually, most days are like the work week and work culture were not built around us, around our comfort and around how our body and everybody's different. It wasn't built. It was built as if there's a certain standard for human beings. And that's how it was built. You work from 4 to 5, you know, and all studies show that that's all wrong, because it actually depletes you and you don't get that much work. And right now I see some days I work 2 hours and for some reason I can't work more. And I realize when I push myself, I end up pretending to be working, but the results are very hard, are bad. You know, like when you're playing, sometimes you don't get it and you're like, you have to leave and then come back to get into that. And well, when we honor that, we become better, much better at performing.
Yeah, I think we, at least in the people I work with and this country in general, we value productivity. And that's how that attitude gets in our mind, where I'm going to work 8, 9 hours a day, whether I feel like it or not. I'm not gonna do any, you know, if I can do more, I'll do more. And but we don't recognize that we are not meant to work that many hours. We need rest. We need companionship. We need food. We need to get out and walk. We need to move our body. It's not about productivity, but it's about enjoying what you're doing, being creative with the tasks that we do have, and being in that flow state that you mentioned. Now we're getting ready to wrap up, and I want you to tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
It's easy for me. Just go to HusseinHalak.com. Search my name, you'll find it. And you can connect with me on LinkedIn or follow me on Substack as well, HusseinHalak.substack.com. I write about these things. My latest article was about fog and how our minds are being mined in such a way that that reduces our ability to produce. And you mentioned productivity. One thing I will finish on is I read this book called Unstoppable, and it talks about these premium athletes like and how they insist on resting before performance. And we do something different where we kind of cram things before performance, and it's the opposite. It's like when resting, your body's ready for doing that. So I think that is what I want to leave with, is that if you want to be more productive and more effective in your life, you need to take care of yourself more, because you're irreplaceable in your life. Not in the context of the world. For the world, you're just another human. But in your life, you're irreplaceable. And if you treat yourself like that, your life quality will increase massively.
Absolutely. Thank you so
Thank
much
you,
for
Jody.
Saying that. Yeah. So HusseinHalak.com is where you can reach Hussein. And Hussein, I want to thank you for your time, your words of wisdom, your book, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And I hope you continue to follow through and act on what's most important in your life.
Thank you very much for the kind wishes and for the lovely interview. I loved it, Jody. Thank you.
You're so welcome. Bye.
I'm so grateful that you've listened to the end of this podcast. Please subscribe, rate, and review it, and share it with your friends. I love teaching insights so that you can have a more impactful and meaningful life. It's my mission to build a thriving community of happy, fulfilled people. Want more? Visit my website at yourspectacularlife.com.